Did you drive up this morning?
But you're going back, right? You're not continuing.
Yeah. I must be in an absolute state of exhaustion. I slept through my alarm this morning. I'd never done that. I had it set for 6, and I kind of went like this, and I'm going, did I hear that? And then I went back to sleep, and then I hear it, and I got up, and I walked out, and the damn thing had been running for 20 minutes.
Wow.
So, well, you didn't have a plane to catch or something like that.
Yeah. Well, believe me, I flew up Highway 1. I had one eye open for cops and the other on the road.
Well, I think everybody's who's going to be here is here. We've got a pretty loose agenda here. Two items, further discussions on the land-based allocations. And then the second one is a discussion of the work products for delivery to the JAG. So in my view, it's really a pretty open agenda. So what I would probably start off with is, anybody have anything new they want to present, any thoughts? I see Mark has handed out a document here on the...
I have to kind of go over that.
Yeah, if you have that, might be a good question.
And also the maps on the wall. That's the best of our ability, the kind of, we transcribed the doodle map from the last meeting to GIS. So
okay,
light green is basically what you guys decided to do. There was a little bit of confusion about what the classifications of all those things were. So you see them mostly as light green, and it's primarily this 600, I think I heard mention of a 600-foot buffer around old growth groves. And then the only thing that I took liberty with was that corridor concept that went from Thompson Gulch and the Mendocino Woodlands STA and ties into the older forest structure zone in the Noyo. Mm-hmm. I kind of made it follow some contour, you know, make sense out.
Yeah,
instead of just a straight line that kind of was going through there.
Great.
And the other map is the ownership surrounding that I think you requested. And Russ was going to follow up with some additional contact with some of the major owners. Yeah, you can go ahead and close that. And I don't know that he's done that or not yet. So it's the major land ownership. The yellow to the west, I asked the GIS tech, Sebastian, to overlay forest land. So the NIPFs, there's two types there. The yellow is basically the forest land owners. It represents a forest overlay.
So that's like TPZ?
Kind of. I don't know this TPZ. It's forest land in the county. So it may or may not be TPZ. And then the other rural residential, I assume, is not forestry oriented. They're going to be much smaller parcels. So that's what that represents.
And then the red to the north is?
That's Hawthorne.
Hawthorne and yellow.
The yellow is the yellow is more of that non-industrial, and then further east is Mendocino, is a kind of a light brown Mendocino Redwood Company, and then just east of Jackson would be Coastal Ridges LLC, and then the orange kind of south central Jackson would be Conservation Fund, and of course the green is State Park.
What's the kind of the pale purple?
That would be Soper Company. That's at Camp 19 on Highway 20, area that's been planned, where the openings have been planned. That's
and so there's two shades of light brown, unless I'm just the lighting. Yeah, I think they're both up.
I think they are both here,
okay.
So it's just I don't know what the...
North and south.
Okay. I don't know why they're differentiated. It could be that the assessor...
This is
something different.
Yeah.
They're the same.
Okay.
And the conservation fund is the one in the middle of the
land. Yeah, it kind of comes up this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they picked up the whole eastern half of what Hawthorne had down there. And down there. The park got the rest
acres,
of that.
Something
yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
15.
Because they picked up 24 total and 9,000 in Salmon Creek.
The other document that I passed out, Brad had had requested some background on Table 7 and the various allocations and the management plan. So Table 7 is up front, and you know this is additional background information. There's other information in the EIR and the management plan, and I think there could be still more yet. Because we did some research on what other people were doing with similar types of forests in the West, and I don't see that represented here, but that was part of the basis. So basically, we have our definitions of the Table 7 structure or soil stage classes to make that clear. Then there's a table in there on about the fourth page is some additional detail, acreage, from map to figure 5. And then beyond that, some more discussion into detail on, say, on individual growth groves or land use types that you see on map figure 5. And then some legislation and Board of Forestry policies have served as a, in large part, a basis for the brown and the blue areas on Jackson, the areas that would be intensively managed for the most part. So it's, we fall back on large part upon the code there. The last thing I threw in, just for the sake of interest, the last page is regional harvest statistics for the last 10 years within the North Coast area, forest practice area. And that's just to, we are a demonstration and should be relevant to the private landowners in the region. And this is kind of an idea of what they've been doing and how it's changed over time. I apologize for the colors. I couldn't figure out how to get this thing to give me a black and white. I can do it in one file, but not in another. So
the clear cut also would include variable retention?
No, that would be an even age structure. Even slash structure. So that would be an even structure. What I did is took a, there's so many systems that people put out there, and I tried to simplify it. The clear cut is purely clear cut or clear cut AP.
So a lot of that could be variable retention. That doesn't meet the rule. That's a lot of what we do.
Yeah, clear cut AP, and then a lot of people put in AP.
AP clear cut.
VR, and yeah. Okay. So that could be in there.
Right.
And then the even age structure would be anybody that calls their thing either AP, variable retention, AP, shelterwood prep, AP, shelterwood seed cut, anything that leaves structure, but it's basically even age.
Okay.
Then the even age removal would be a removal step, like seed tree removal, shelterwood removal, various types of APs.
What's AP?
Alternative prescription. Anytime you do something that doesn't meet, the rules are very prescriptive, so it's pretty easy to fall out. Sometimes it's easy to fall outside of those prescriptive standards, and you're forced into an alternative prescription.
You know, and generally, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think generally those tend to end up looking like VRs.
I would say a lot of them do. What has happened, so though, people want to do a combination of thinning, shelterwood selection, but their land base is so hacked up that they call the whole thing an AP and they practice four things on the THP, and they don't want to designate it on the ground. That's a real headache to enforce and evaluate, but that's what happens.
So when you want to do rehab and then thin clumps.
Yeah.
And is there no A alternative in the last few years, if I'm reading this? I'm trying to get...
Right. That's dropped off. Now, if you look at this, I was keeping these statistics, I kept these statistics for 20 years prior to this, too. It's the two striking things are, number one, the acreage harvested annually is way down from, say, the 1990s.
80s, 90s, right.
And then the amount of removal cuts is way, way, way down. The selections appears to be pretty static. The clear cut is almost appears to be up as a percentage of the total, not up absolutely, but as a percentage of the total because the total acreage is down.
And is that the pure white one there?
The clear cut would be the dark one towards the bottom, the first dark one climbing up the.
Oh, the first column. Dark one.
Yeah. So okay. There's about as much clear cut as there is select. And you see the statistics of which is the 10 years combined.
So by removal cuts, which categories were you including?
Would be an even age removal, even slash removal.
Right, okay.
Sheltered removal, see through removal.
It'd be, white, okay. It'd be white in the middle that you see kind of declining as you go from left to right.
So those are all even age, the clear cut and all that.
Well, you know, so you never know. You don't know what its intentions for the future are or what the conditions on the site are. So it's kind of a mixture.
The clear cuts probably are even age.
Yeah.
And the reason that the clear cuts kind of staying about the same or maybe even going up a little bit is Campbell. Because they bought into that hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, I mean, they always were. They inherited that from GP and continued. A lot of times, though, a clear cut, if you can't meet, you don't think you meet stocking and you're done, your intentions may be uneven age in the future, but you call it a clear cut now. And you know you're going to have a bunch of regen out there, but you're not sure you're going to meet the stocking standards, so you call it a clear cut.
Yep.
So there's a lot of things going on. Mm-hmm.
And this is the entire coast area?
Yes.
Santa Cruz?
I believe Santa Cruz is in there.
Okay. Oh, this is the whole.
Yeah, I think it's the whole Shebang Coast area. So it's got a little bit of Douglas fir country.
Not just Mendocino.
No.
Okay.
So that
makes a big difference. That includes Humboldt.
It's got Green Diamond. Green Diamond. So you got their even age manager.
Yeah.
Could you send me this electronically so I can have the colors?
Yes.
The table above. I understand the grand pool, I can see the years. The table above.
It's all years combined.
It's all years combined.
It's 10 years worth.
It's 10 years worth. That's what my question was. Thanks.
Okay, so get us back on track here. In terms of an agenda. Can I do this, Brad?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. I would suggest that we start immediately in on the allocation discussion and try and focus our energies on cleaning that up. And then migrate to the second part of what was on the agenda. But I'd like to try and leave here today with a relatively well wrapped out idea about this allocation to be able to share back with the rest of the group.
I guess the only thing I would ask is there anything in this board policy that you put in here that we should be aware of that's going to impact our allocations?
Well, there is a lot on balance. It depends on which way you're. The majority of Jackson is supposed to be productive, sustainable, and a demonstration, a viable demonstration. Okay, that's kind of the primary mandate, the MFP kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind as you attempt to balance things. We tried to do that as we laid out map figure 5 in the allocations and made a significant contribution to late Cyril, and then to older forest structure, which is something kind of new.
Which lend themselves, however, to some form of demonstration.
Yes. So that's my only thing. I would take the time to read that stuff because it's really what the policy and the legislation is what lies behind all this that we worked on and what you are working on. that's part of the charge to kind of to stay within those confines, but which are not distinct. Okay.
There's nothing hardwired.
No.
No. It's just general policy guidelines, mm-hmm. as are the goals section in the management plan.
So the other issue that we started talking about at the last full JAG that we should probably not lose is this dichotomy between whether the blue and tan areas are managed towards a long-term structural goal or whether there's a mix of several classes in there. And I think where we left that last time was to take on the issue of what the inherent differences in the property might look like with respect to the vegetation, and with the idea that if there's some component of emulation forestry or whatever you want to call it, driving the landscape, that there might be some resources and individuals who could speak to that concept. I'm thinking about how this is communicated, how the goals and objectives for the property as a whole are communicated. So that was one of my takeaways from the last meeting. I'm happy to follow up on that.
And thank goodness that Linwood remembered that we had this meeting and that he and I had been tasked with a homework assignment, which he called me yesterday on, and we went to work on it and have something to share with the group.
Great. We always like to do things, you know, well ahead of time, you know, so we can, you know, hash them out and think about them a second time.
We're in not for this call. I might not be sitting here, I want to admit.
Yesterday's well ahead of time.
Well, but we did get it done, and I think we're pretty happy with what we have to share with folks. Admittedly, I think it's a straw man, but it will solicit some discussion, I think.
Yeah.
So very good. Whenever we're ready to move ahead.
I also had a self-imposed homework assignment to figure out that jug handle pygmy thing, which actually entailed spending a couple of days out there.
That could have been bad.
Oh, that's nice.
It was fine. So anyway, I have that to report on, too.
You want to start with that?
No.
Okay.
I forget what your homework assignment was. That would help me to even frame everything to even know what that was. I forgot.
Well, Linwood, why don't you tee it up as far as what our thoughts were as to what we were supposed to be doing?
Well,
what we're saying, Jed, just at some point I'd like to talk about the growth modeling a little bit, the people can put
okay.
in stuff
so,
about that. So, but not and, now, and, but later.
But I think, just so you know, that is on our minds as well. Okay. And I think that our discussion would lead exactly right into the issue of growth modeling. And I gave it some more thought after we hung up the phone.
Okay. I mean, basically, I was looking at it, and Mike kind of clarified it a little bit for me. We were really focusing on types of management which would occur in those broad areas where timber production is one of the main focuses. In other words, the late Sarrel, that has its own allocation. The older forest structure, that may have its own allocation. But the areas that are... I guess you point out there the
kind of like the purple.
The purple and the brown is all even age management.
No. The browns and tans are uneven.
I'm sorry, I meant uneven.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the brown and tan and the blue. So those were the areas we were really looking at. And then how it would differ from the west side of the forest to the east side of the forest. So what we did is we basically looked at the extremes. Let's go to the west side, the very west, and see what happened there, how we thought, you know, stands would naturally occur, what type of natural disturbance cycles you would see there. Then go to the far east side and look at that and different slope aspects. And then obviously something in the middle would be a transition between the two. So rather than try to figure everything out with a cross, right. across the whole landscape, we took the two extremes and came
Which
up with...
created the continuum, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I've got to say about what I did has to do with that far west extremity.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that pretty much it in a nutshell?
That's exactly what we discussed and then went to work on. And then just to add, so that Ben Sims understands, a piece that we did not venture into, but I think is directly tied to the modeling exercise, is that after you get this continuum agreed upon, basically, as a management theme, then I think it's critically important that you go in and you do some modeling with various returns, okay, intensity of returns, to see then what the yield based on our themes project, both yields and long-term growth. And so we did not, as part of our exercise, look at entry, necessarily the entry intervals. What we tried to do was look more to the intensity of harvest and the variation of harvest and opening size across the continuum. And so we don't get hung up on numbers here. It would then be my intention, and I, you know, tell me if you agree, that the next step would be to run some hypotheticals as far as timing of entries and what the expectation of timber flow and forest development would be if you did that.
So by
I think it's easy to do.
So by
intensity, I don't know if we would need to go that far myself.
Well, from terms of analyzing the economic impact of what we're considering, you know, what his mandates as managers and what the state, you know, the Board of Forestry is going to ask the question, hey, if we do this, what does this mean financially to us?
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's critically important that, you know, we deliver some, well, if you do it this way, it's here, and if you do it this way, it's here.
And what proportion of growth is involved in these harvests?
That's what the modeling exercise would kick out. So I can just share with you verbally the continuum that we created, and we can have a discussion around that. And then if people are comfortable, I think we could go back to the map then and say, all right, here's the, you know, we could finish up putting edges on the work that Mark did. Do we agree with where Mark is contained, where we're putting the late Searle and old forest structure? And then that would give us an idea of where this natural continuum overlay would go. So it's just a starting point for discussion, in my view. Any input?
Do you think, by presenting what we have done, it's going to drastically influence putting the final touches on the areas we've already talked about?
No, I actually think it would facilitate putting the final touches on.
Okay.
And here's why. If there's a comfort with what would go on the balance of the forest, then, you know, some of the key areas that people have identified that may or may not be up on that map yet,
mm-hmm,
could be focused on, knowing that here's what's going to go on the rest of the forest, and we're comfortable collectively with that.
Okay. And I guess the other thing that we talked
about, and I know that's really important to you.
I guess the other thing we talked about, and just to make, you know, everyone feel comfortable about it, that we intentionally did not discuss if there was a specific study that needed to be done to test the forest practice rules, which is a big mandate of state forest, that would fall out of these allocations.
Yeah.
There would be research areas that would take on those issues.
Which I think was
simply balling me.
Yes. But I just wanted to point that out. We did mention that in our discussion, that, you know, that would, it's not like this is what has to be every inch of the state forest, there will be areas where specific research to test different theories or forest practice rules would be taking place.
It might be worthwhile, you know, Mike, how you're outlining the tan and the gray area and the concept of modeling the economics of the economic implications of different scenarios. It might be worthwhile to do a similar just quick thought exercise on what are the research and demonstration opportunities with each of those runs, because, you know, each and linking to the research agenda, the developing research agenda would probably make the whole package stronger.
Yeah, and additionally, it would, if you're doing the economic modeling, you a natural fallout from that would also be habitat development projections.
Right.
And I don't think that we would necessarily overtax the GIS and modeling capacity of what you're currently working with to run a couple of these scenarios.
No.
Okay, so with that, then, should I jump in here? We'll go from the west side to the east side.
Yeah.
So the west side, heavy to redwood, flat, southwestern, southern, southeastern exposures, northeastern, northwestern exposures. We would contemplate single tree selection or small clumped selection, opening sizes of a fifth acre, opening without retention. Fifth acre. Extending that on north-facing slopes to up to a half-acre opening without retention.
What do you mean by retention, just for clarity?
No structural retention. It could be an absolute clear-cut opening.
One-fifth-acre clear-cut.
No retention.
Mike, can you go through what were those aspects again? You kind of read.
So everything except north faces. Everything except for just straight north faces.
Okay.
Now, what we were trying to vision in this exercise was a kind of a combination of what we thought the natural replacement regimes were, what kind of openings were created in the old growth forest. Okay, now we're dealing with the second growth setting, sure. But yeah, you know, what kind of holes probably opened up? Mm-hmm. There were usually single trees falling over that created openings in those really dense, old growth, heavy to redwood stands. But then too, with the idea of on a north face slope, if you were going to ever do anything that would have successful regeneration, you got to open up a little bit of a hole for light. Okay.
The half acre on the north face isn't really based so much on what the forest might have done naturally, but recognizing it's a kind of a compromise because you're wanting to maintain it in production.
I mean, we tried to kind of combine the two the best we could within reason. And I don't know that we've got much in the way of anecdotal information to suggest the absolute size that was created in openings in old growth forest stands in Mendocino County. I was shocked the one day that we went out with Mark and we were looking at that north facing slope that I thought was, you know, where somebody had done some commercial cutting and during the lawsuit we had to leave the timber lie on the ground, only to hear that there was a windstorm that knocked out that big of an opening that we saw there. Now, did that occur? Would that have looked the same in an old growth setting? Maybe it would have if the fir component had been as high as that hillside we were looking at. So those were the kinds of things that we were talking about.
My gut tells me that half an acre would not be out of too far out of the normal distribution of openings.
Yeah.
Natural, if you get a big tree hitting another tree, taking a couple, two or three trees down at one time, I could see
it might have that. Yeah.
So I could see it not being.
I want to just make a little point because I don't want to disrupt this, but there's a question about how often this would happen.
That's you're right, and remember what I said about that we didn't tackle that because we felt the return intervals is something that should be looked at not in a vacuum, but with the eye to how would that affect cash flow, stream, and habitat development. And that's where I think the modeling exercise will give us some opportunities to look at the effects of that. Okay? All right. So there were also stands. Well, we see stands out there, and we thought that probably in pre-settlement times there were stands that had a higher Douglas fir component than just the dense redwood stands.
Even on the west side.
Even on the west side, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
So stands that had a whitewood component exceeding 40%.
And you're collecting Doug Fir's whitewood, I tend
to think.
Yeah,
all whitewood.
Okay.
So it could be those stands with grand fir, too.
Okay.
And not excluding the pine stands.
Okay.
All right. Group selection, half acre, maximum opening side.
So this is some portion of the west side, you're saying.
Yeah, and it'd be after you look at it and actually see what the balance is of whitewood to redwood in those stands. And we thought, you know, even on north-facing slopes, group selection openings half an acre would be acceptable.
The half an acre dimension would result in a diameter across that's less than tree height. Wouldn't that be true? So the openings are really, half an acre is really very small.
Well, a fifth acre is 104 feet. So what's a...
In diameter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's that? Fifth acre is what? 100 feet, yeah.
Yeah, 100. Yeah, because it's 52.
So it's going to probably be 130 feet, something like that.
A half an acre?
Yeah, it's not going to be a whole lot more. I mean, when you make a circle bigger.
Square.
Yeah.
I don't know that. Well, I do know this, though, John.
Yeah.
I've cut some half acre openings. And actually been surprised at how large they seem to me.
They look large, but if you're looking at sort of microclimate, there's not much in the middle that is going to provide a microclimate for the more, for the Douglas fir, or the more intolerant. So I'm just asking a question.
Yeah.
When I'm looking at the size of openings, I find it helpful to look at not the physical size, but express it as a function of tree height.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, a half an acre opening is a hell of a lot more a bigger opening when you're dealing with small sized trees than with large sized trees.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yeah.
That might be. Do you choose your tree? I mean, are you talking about a full tree, or are you talking about the trees that are actually there at the time?
The trees that are there at the time.
Yeah. That's a great suggestion.
And what it is, what kind of regeneration are we wanting to have there? Determines the size of that and the size of the surrounding stand determines the size of the opening.
Well, and two, you can't take away from that the entry.
Sure, sequential
intervals will affect that.
It's
regeneration.
Easier to do it the first time. It's a lot more difficult the second, third, fourth.
But I've been surprised on north-facing slopes in Mendocino County with the volume of fir that I've seen seeded in on openings.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily big openings.
Yeah.
Now, it'll maybe not be robust in its growth. But
see, that's the question.
You know, it grows.
It'll
and curve. It will survive.
It'll survive.
But it won't be like, okay, we're not maximizing the growth on the site like a clear-cut opening in production forestry would. But I'm not sure that that's...
That's not the question in uneven age management. You're not trying to maximize individual tree growth.
Right.
You're looking at stand growth, and you're looking for the a composition. You want the regeneration to grow sufficiently well that it's a legitimate component.
That it gets to maturity.
And so that then determines size of the earth. I'm not saying that I'm uncomfortable with the half an acre, but in my gut, it's small relative to trees that, you know, already 100 feet tall.
Or more.
Or more.
You've got to get the axes down on the west side.
You've got to get them down. I mean, the engineering issues, safety issues. You've got to get the trees down. You've got to get them logged out.
Yeah. The other difficulty with a small opening is that you end up with a lot of them. And so it's very difficult to maneuver and work through the sand over time.
Yeah. So we may
have got that many spots in it.
Well, I actually, you know, I like your idea of, instead of maybe talking about the acreage,
about
tree height for limitations.
Biologically, it makes more sense.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Okay, so that kind of captures our West Side thoughts. And
I need a clarification. Are you talking about all group selection then on this category with the fir that we've been talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And
in what portion of the West Side are you thinking about?
On the Doug fir dominated
part. Where the white was more than 40%.
You'd look at the
scene. Where they are now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
where they were historically, yeah. but where they are now.
I think what you'd find, what we didn't put in here, and maybe, there are a few stands on the west side that don't exhibit a species composition that was similar to what pre-settlement composition, and that there's hardwoods that have occupied whitewood spots. But generally, we thought on the west side, probably those stands that didn't have heavy redwood, that the openings have been filled with whitewoods. So you may have a similar dedication of ground than what you had pre-settlement. And the white woods give way to hard woods as you move to the east.
We might want to. Did you give any thought to?
Well, Granford gives way to hard wood. Not that.
The composition is on Jackson is driven in part by historic management factors and to some degree the underlying topographic and physical environment. Mm-hmm. So, did you give any thought as to how do we determine what the quote unquote baseline composition target is? How do you tease out the management history effects as compared to the underlying topographic and physical effects?
No. We didn't talk about that. I tell you, in my mind, I was assuming that it probably isn't a lot different today than it was then, at least in species composition and location.
Yeah. What makes you think that? Let's not get distracted by this.
This is relevant to this discussion.
Okay.
Very relevant. Just looking at the small remnant stands of old growth that we have in Mendocino County that I've been to, and I think I've been to most of them, looking at upslope conditions and recognizing that fire hasn't been back through those stands,
right,
and trying to understand, figure out what that dynamic does to them. I still think that what we see on Jackson State Forest is probably similar in species composition to what was there. You know, the upslope old growth stands that are still here, mm-hmm. low site, have a lot of hardwood in them, have a lot of Douglas fir, smaller trees.
Well, I
have a little different view on that. I think that the management has shifted this very heavily to fir due to the degree of disturbance in the past, and I think that even on the west end, you probably were running 70-80% redwood or more.
How come you don't see the stumps then?
They're there. if you, there's an inherent level based on this, they're just suppressed on the north-facing slopes. You still have a pretty good density of redwood out there. They just, they're suppressed because they don't meet the side of the Douglas Fir.
Because the Douglas Fir
get up there first.
Yes, agreed.
And so if we do these group openings, one of the things we'll probably have to do is stocking control, because they'll come back very, very heavy to Grand Fir and Doug Fir. Mm-hmm. And we'll go in there and do something pretty commercial, early commercial, to take the fir back and let the redwood go.
Right. But yeah. the remnant, what I was talking about, I think we're in agreement. The pattern is still there. You can go to those sites, look around, and say, in pre-settlement, here's what this looked like. We haven't lost it to the point where we can't vision what it looks like.
We can. I think get it back certainly, and send it in various different ways. You know, I mean, we maybe don't want it to go back to where it was, because you probably had a lot of hardwood occupying places, and you had a lot of. We want to be productive, so we should demonstrate many different things, but we want to favor redwood.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that there's any way to get to a magical, pre-settlement compositional number, but I do think that
you could trend.
You could trend.
It would seem that it's a statement of policy, though, that maybe we would want to try to emulate what was pre-European composition, not the current composition, because if what
as a, you're saying, as a trend, is saying,
economics
trend.
Says you want to do that anyway.
Yeah, right. One of those cases where it's totally complementary. Yeah, and establishing, if we were to adopt something similar to what Mike is proposing, just knowing, where there are significant departures on the landscape due to the regeneration history would be a good thing to know, because that would establish sort of our baseline understanding of what we're shooting for.
And it gives all kinds of openings to great research and demonstration projects then, too.
It definitely has a different silvicultural implication, though, of what he's saying and what you're saying, Mark, is that on the north-facing slopes, we have suppressed redwood because the Doug Fir is taken over. Am I stating that right?
I think creating the openings allows, I might argue about the size, yeah, but having the ability to take out pockets of fir is certainly beneficial.
Right. And I'm thinking that maybe if you're wanting to increase the redwood, then you don't want to create the opening so much for creating conditions that would have more fir regenerate, because it's the better site, but maybe you want more selection.
Single tree will do the same on a north-facing slope. As a matter of fact, it might be worse. You have less opportunity to release those redwood if you are just picking out individual trees.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if we're in a situation like that and you definitely want to increase the redwood, then you may have the group openings with retention and retain
the redwood.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Well, that's more I was thinking. Mm-hmm. You would want to create openings around the redwoods, kind of like we did for the late Cyril. Mm-hmm. You go in and you look and say, okay, here's the trees that we want to favor, and then you organize it.
We could add that into this prescription. That when redwood is present in the stand and suppressed, that it should be targeted for retention.
This is probably as good a time as any to mention that the first day I was out there, I got completely diverted from my original point, of course, as usual, and did sort of a transit around the forest through Road 500 and then back around 408 and 409, and I hadn't been out at the big clear cuts out on 500 for a long time, but I remember that the last time we were there we had noticed this thing. There are a lot of trees out there, the redwoods, that are exhibiting this very heavy burn of some sort. I don't know what we want to characterize it as, and in terms of favoring redwoods and not favoring redwoods, I just wonder if maybe we're getting into, climate change stuff or something that is, that it will take even a greater conscious effort if we want to favor redwoods, because they're going to have difficulties based on where the whole macro system is going. So I don't know, Mark, do you have a sense of what's going on?
Trees on the leading edge.
Oh, these are throughout that whole basin.
Yeah, if trees on the leading edge anywhere within 10 miles of the coast, are especially up high on the higher you go, are going to get the salt burn. So if you go way out to the west and you say cut all the fir out of a stand, your redwood's not going to do it. It will continue to respond, but the tops of those trees and at times will even die all the way out.
So that salt burn even down in that bowl that's well below.
Well, I don't know what you're looking at because some of that could just be chlorotic conditions, which varies over time in trees, and it doesn't really affect their growth rate. So I don't really know what you're looking at.
Well, it's very widespread.
Those clear cuts are extremely vigorous. So that's just kind of my overall impression.
Maybe that's sudden death syndrome.
Well, you know, I actually let myself think about that for a split second. Said, nah, you know.
I don't know. My impression is that those stands are very healthy and doing quite well.
Well, they are, but they're looking very burnt right now.
Yeah,
today.
Now that happens, and it'll happen particularly in the dominant trees standing on it. If you create an edge, if the ocean's out here, and you clear cut here and create an edge, you're going to see it.
Even
yeah, but see, this is down below that. This is that's way down below that ridge in a bowl. I mean, it's a southeast facing bowl. But it, you know, it's not a. It's not like not going to be wind burn per se or anything because there's a high. There's the ridge behind it. So anyway, I just wanted to bring it up because I was kind of mystified, and it's very widespread.
Your overarching point regarding climate change, though, is a good one. It's why. In my mind, you know, we don't get too prescriptive or dogmatic about compositional issues. I think if you can establish, you know, sort of a pattern out there that is more akin to a Monet painting than a Picasso, you know, you're doing a good job because things are subject to change.
Some climate modelers are suggesting that the Redwood region actually is going to trend. The climate change in the Redwood region is actually going to benefit Redwood. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
I just wanted to bring it up.
We'll cross that bridge when what comes to us.
They actually saw that in when we were doing the cryptos, originally putting cryptos together, that the Redwood, during the drought, it just took off. You know, there was a 5-year period, it just took off. Because water wasn't a limiting factor. But anyway, neither here.
That's really interesting.
Huh.
Yeah.
By the way, the half acre is, if I did my math right, is 160 foot.
So it's getting at the near to height of dominant trees right now. But give them another 50 years and we'll need another 50 feet on there probably. Okay. So I still think that, you know, John's idea of using your tree size is maybe more biologically justifiable. Now we go to the pendulum swings to the east side.
The far east side.
Far east side.
The far east side. Linwood Street.
In the far east.
In the far east.
In the far east.
And again, thank God for Linwood because he suggested that we tackle either end and then the middle just dropped out for us.
Yeah.
We did have to spend so much time on it. All right, so east side. North, northwest, northeast exposures. Stands heavy to dug fir.
And does this start sort of east of Chamberlain? Would that be the east side?
Basically? I think that was kind of what we had in mind, yeah. Okay, depending on species composition, you scattered hardwood or hardwood stands, scattered redwood in the stands. Half acre to 2.5 acre openings with retention.
Half to.
And the opening size would be driven by the species composition.
To 2.5 acres or something.
Yeah, 2.5 acres, which was the maximum allowable in the rules
for group selection. So we're saying use group selection in this part of the world, but leave some retention. High quality Douglas fir phenotypes, wind firm. Leaving no more than approximately 25% canopy. That's in the openings. And try and aggregate your retention if possible.
So say what that means, aggregate.
Clustered.
Clustered.
As opposed to scattered.
Many variable retention.
Within the cluster. I see, within, yeah. Right.
That no, sometimes has plays in when you're trying to win for a Douglas fir.
No, I understand that. And would there be any single tree selection out here, or is this purely clustered?
We didn't contemplate any. We thought that probably what would end up happening with the driving force being some canopy retention within the openings, that you would end up naturally going into the redwood clumps and thinning them. So you'd be doing selection in the clumps, generally.
In the future.
Yeah.
And then I saw it as there'd be some areas of single tree selection. I mainly was looking at this as the, you know, what's the limits.
Right, this is the...
Yeah, and that's what you got. These are the maximum limits.
Yeah,
that's
right. Yeah. Thank you.
And then what about thinning between the groups openings, and what about, you know, percentage of some piece of the landscape that would be in openings?
Well, it would keep rotating, right? So you would move through it eventually.
Yeah. This would be, these are within unit.
Right, but is it like a 2.5 acre opening, a 2.5 acre not opening, a 2.5 acre opening, 2.5 acre
Okay, well, that goes back to, again, where those numbers fall out, Kathy, I think, is the further discussion of how often do you want to enter the stands.
Yes.
The more you enter the stands, the less often you would have those openings. If you were going to use 30-year intervals between reentries, you would create more openings. If you're only at 10 between intervals, mm-hmm. less. But we did not tackle that because we thought, you know, this is something that a modeling exercise will guide that.
And then what about thinning between the groups?
Yeah,
I mean, everything I've seen says you ought to, you know.
Yeah. So. And the other thing is, I mean...
And we didn't. That actually, I don't think we talked about that.
I think I just assumed it.
Yeah, I didn't even give it consideration, so that's...
Yeah. And, you know, the limitations on group selection, and someone who's done them more than I have, which is never, can answer this. I believe you can't have more than 20% of the area in a group opening.
That's correct.
Correct.
Until the areas within the groups meet stocking standards.
Okay.
So that's it's like 75 the 5 years, 5 years, 5 feet thing, or
no. It's a base layer.
Selection 70,
standard.
75 square feet.
Oh, 75. Okay.
So that'd be considerably longer.
And how long would that take?
25 years.
Well, yeah, it takes somewhere between 10 and 20, I would say. But you're limited to 20%, so you're probably going to plan this out to achieve, you know, every 20 years, say, 5-8 classes, you've got a 100-year cycle.
But that's
one possibility.
That
you
is.
Can do it lots
yeah.
of different ways. You can have right. more cycles. More
those of us, but those of us that have done group selection, classic group selection in Redwood in the last 20 years, typically we use that model.
Yeah. That kind of allows you to operate as much area as intensively as the law will allow within that area.
So that now, those are your north slopes mainly. And you have to keep in mind what we were thinking about was what naturally occurred, you know, and we feel as though fire was more, had more of an influence on the east end of the forest. So that brought us around to, okay, now what do we do on these southern exposures, southeastern, southwestern exposures? And we talked about what we saw last year in the burns, how the fire behaved. And it was clear to me that on southern exposures and southwestern exposures, we had most of our crown fires and large openings created during that burn. And that probably wasn't by measure as intense a burn as maybe happened historically, because it was early in the year. But it was also burning through fuels that were different than naturally would have
been.
But recognizing that, you know, usually those exposures are hotter and drier, mm-hmm. and as the fire moves up the slope, it gains in steam and intensity. So we said opening sizes were, you could go up to 10 acres in size with the same kind of retention standards that we just described for the other slopes. So you'd be doing VRs. Mm-hmm. You might do VRs, 10-acre VRs in those areas. And but we both agreed that any fire pattern on Jackson State Forest that happened prehistory never was completely stand replacing.
Right.
But yeah, there was always retention.
I don't know that there's really the data to support a certain opening size or even pattern of overstory structural modification for the east side forest. So I think we should be, you know, just cautious as to how the rationale is communicated there. I think, you know, if it's it's obviously a mix of emulation forestry and silviculture, and we should just communicate it that way, because the field conditions are so dramatically different. There are some, the only data that we do have, which is from Humboldt County, where I've seen, you know, actual white woods kicked off by forests, suggest that it could happen the way you're describing it, as in an analogous old growth system, but there could also be a lower severity fire that sort of burns through and does more of a diffuse kill on several trees, and then you get a flush of white woods after that. But the overstory retention in that scenario would be much, much greater, I would suspect, than 25%. So, you know, just a little bit of, I just don't know.
It's noisy out there.
And, you know, on a south-facing slope, you could handle a higher retention standard and still get the regeneration.
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to a north-facing slope, if you left the canopy, you know, the idea of opening up light would just be lost. Right. Where on the south and southwest, you could handle higher retention standards.
Yeah, so, I mean, we could, in light of that, we could change that 25% canopy to something higher, though 25% for regeneration underneath.
But if it's aggregated.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being totally dispersed. Because you'd have some areas that were just wide open.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like you could develop, I mean, this is really where the experimental side of demonstration of Jackson could shine, because if you have a thematic approach, as you described for the West Side Forest, that is, you know, seems to be reasonably underpinned, I think, by some data and observations, and you're less sure about the higher end of fire severity, you could actually set it up so that, you know, you're doing as part of your overall theme for the east side, you're testing different burn prescriptions, and you're also looking at different wildlife habitat responses.
Remember, this was our max. This
right.
wasn't our average. This
right.
was our max, so
yeah.
that's exactly what
so
we
you
were.
Could do a whole
yeah.
maximum 25% retention.
And 10-acre opening, and 10-acre VR, max.
Yeah.
So you would have, you would do it, you know, you'd have 3 to 10s or
right.
half acre
right.
to 10s.
Right.
The top end would be that. And even within that 10, you would have retention.
25% would be a minimum.
Yeah,
yeah, I was going to say, the 25% is the minimum, not the max. The opening is the max. The retention is the minimum.
Oh, okay. But it's just the opposite.
25%
okay.
is the minimum.
Yeah.
Retention.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And did you mean that before? Because I wrote down no more than 25% of canopy and openings.
That was for the west side.
That was for the west side, but
yeah.
this is...
For the east side.
No, I still wrote it down wrong. Okay.
Yeah, and actually, I don't know that we pinned that down in our discussion, or I didn't capture it in my notes.
Not on the east side.
Yeah.
I think you said about on the west side.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like about the discussion that's going on is we're talking about what we think is... The conditions that we're trying to emulate, and then we're talking about the silviculture that we're going to apply to try to emulate them. I see as a product in what we produce is kind of the table that describes in one column, this is what we think we're trying to mate, and this is the mechanism.
Prescription to get there.
I think that's going to be a really strong.
And it ties back to what we feel was a natural pattern of dynamics
right.
across that continuum.
Right.
And I think when Linwood and I have been expressing our support for natural forest management, this is what we've had in our minds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I just underscore that? Because this would differentiate, in my view, practices in Jackson and the Redwood Ridges that differ from what we used to do in the past. In the bad old days, silviculture dogma was that there was these four or five methods of silviculture, seed tree, shoulder wood, and this, people expected, foresters expected, well, we'll try one of those things. Where in actual fact, they are just theoretical models, and you've got this continuum. I would say that in the past, the tendency in forestry was to apply one of these fairly standard approaches. The innovation in the future is to start at the other end. What is the structure you're trying to create? Based on an understanding of vegetation dynamics and species composition. And you back away from that, and therefore you end up with the method, which happens to be an opening of this size. So I think that's the way, in my view, I would like to see the choice of silviculture expressed as relying heavily on what the outcome is. It's outcome driven. Whereas silviculture previously was process driven.
The one thing that I feel, I understand that we're talking about the production. Clearly, so you're talking about the part where you're concerned about production. And therefore, a lot of what you're talking about, it seems to me, is driven by silvicultural prescriptions that are designed really to maintain production. And we've kind of lost the idea that we're going back to trying to look at how the forest might evolve naturally. And we're interfering with it a lot on a time scale. Like if we're going back in every 20 years to do these kind of clear-cut openings and stuff, that is not what happens naturally in the forest when it was in an old growth state, or if we're trying to get it back to there or not.
But we're talking about the areas that are for production, not necessarily the ones that are for to be put back into the old.
Well, and of course, you know, my point was to the extent that we can combine production with letting them grow back. And I feel like we're kind of falling back into here. Dividing the forest into two kind of into distinct sections. One, which we're going to treat primarily for their kind of ecological value. And then the other one we're going to treat primarily for its production value. And I'd like to see a much hazier division between those two things. I mean, I don't see, if we're emulating what happens in a forest naturally, that we would be doing 10-acre, lots of 3, 4, 10-acre clear cuts on any kind of a time scale that you're envisioning here.
You're jumping to a conclusion, Jens.
Okay.
And that is precisely the reason that we delayed any discussion on timing, because that, if you are correct, if you assume very continuous and short entries onto sites, how you time these themes that we suggest is the driver for whether or not you mimic the absolute temporal, exact temporal pattern that evolved without man's hand, or whether you pattern high productions, production forest. So that's why I said early on that discussion has to be informed by what, but by doing one end or the other, what the forest would be capable of producing under those themes. You know, if you're only going in and doing something like this on the east side once every 50 years, I would tell you though that probably looks like what was going on way back then. If you're doing it every 10 years, no, but that might be something that if you were charged with making money off the forest, you do.
Right. And but we're not all agreed, but if we're doing things that are really designed for research to kind of show what a commercial forester might do, that's a specific thing that is a research project, but it's not what we're trying to talk about in the broader landscape allocation. So, because I would bring up the fact we are dealing with a public forest. We're not dealing with a commercial piece of timberland. And so our kind of, values of what our rates of return and everything ought to be off this. I certainly am agreed that we need to produce enough timber revenue on a sustainable basis to do what the management plan legislation says, which is to support the forest system, state forest system. I don't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem with trying to manage it because this is a big forest. We're definitely going to get to be able to do that. We just looked at the economics of, right now we can't do it, maybe a $200 or $300 stumpage, but on a normal path, you don't have to cut a huge amount in this forest to make $7 million or whatever Helge said was the budget. I don't want to lose sight of the biological thing, which I think we were all starting to talk about a lot, is driving things, some kind of biological things, and shifting too far over to just the commercial forestry side of it without really balancing what's going on. That's all I'm really saying.
Good thought. Good thought. Come on. We have to breathe.
Yeah, I'm big on air myself.
Maybe you can just crack the door open, too.
Oh, yes.
I'd like to hear from you two guys about this.
Yeah, it just occurs to me that it's premature to make a judgment call on that kind of question, because it's a time interval thing, and it's also we just don't know given the modeling projections and all the variables that we're talking about what the end revenue stream looks like. And until we do, I think we're just sort of stabbing the air, and, you know, with beliefs and thoughts. So I think it's, you know, Mike's and Linwood have presented this as a straw man. I think we should continue to discuss it and populate it. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, we just adopt 10 acres as the standard. I mean, as part of the revenue projections, the modeling exercise that go along with that, you could also model the opening sizes, the min and max opening sizes, to see where you end up on that. You're describing a biological economic continuum, and where we ultimately end up on that is where we'll have the most consensus, you know, as a group. So I would suggest we do the modeling exercises as suggested, but keep it all the aspects of that open until we actually have data in hand to make an informed decision.
Just one note on modeling, that the models that currently exist don't have the capability of discerning the growth by opening size.
Growth by opening size.
We would have to do dual modeling, where you do a thinning model next to a clear-cut model, and you combine the results. And so the only difference is what the absolute area of your clear-cut that you acreage you model versus your thinning. And that way you can kind of, you won't emulate, you won't predict the growth within the opening, but you will get the mix of the production.
Kind of an averaged condition.
Yeah.
And how by doing that, how would you characterize sort of three categories of opening? I mean, to what degree of resolution can you get? Can you characterize, say, a 2.5 acre opening, a 5 acre opening, and a 10 acre opening by using this method?
Yes.
You could.
But you won't differentiate the growth within the opening. You won't be able to discern the difference between the growth levels within the openings.
No, not within the openings.
No, but
if I understood you correctly, right, the overall growth, you've been characterizing these buckets, these categories.
You know, within, you know, the crypto isn't designed for group selection. It's an oddball. You have this effect on the trees in the opening where they, the growth might decline as you move towards the edge in the shade, whereas the overstory trees on that face the opening might be growing faster than the ones within the stand.
Right.
So you always assume that it's going to balance out.
And
it's just the nature of what we got. This in of itself is ripe for a really high-intensity study at Jackson to create a good predicting model that actually does get out real growth when you manage like this.
Yeah. Also, an inventory system that will support it. Mm-hmm. Currently, our inventory system would be hopeless in getting growth information from variable retention.
Well, you know, actually, we've done that with our model. I mean, we calculate a certain basal area of retention and grow it forward within stand. So, I mean, we've done it. Whether or not it's entirely accurate, I don't know. But we have kind of like this morphed, no, not morphed, but it's a layered model where we use, what is it, Crypto's growth model for growth, and then our own system of inventory, stand-based inventory. So it's been done once before. Whether or not it's predicting accurately, it remains to be seen.
Well, you know, the thing that we're talking about here, coming back to the allocation issue, it's only a small part of the forest that I look at that we're really talking about, because, you know, that suits this conditions. And I'm looking at this kind of site, it's lower site potential, and it's also not going to be a big benefit generator for quite some long period of time. So, I mean, it's, I don't know. I'm just saying we shouldn't, like, get caught too much up into a ideological battle over something that's not at the center of probably most people's concerns.
Most of the area, and I presume, is not in the far west or the far east. Most of it's in this middle. And, we've described a possible straw man for the two extremes.
Well, and I think that what we were suggesting is flexible enough that it allows a person that maybe they're finding themselves more towards the west side of the property, but they've got a micro location of a extreme south-facing slope on thin soils that meets some of the more eastern side criteria for prescriptions, and you can go ahead and go, hey, this can move. It is not absolute.
Well, I would like to think that it would be common for someone to walk onto the forest and not really be able to define what the silvicultural approach is, because you're not rigidly applying a method, because it will be variable. How you apply the treatment in terms of opening size will vary depending where you are on the slope and micro situations of geomorphology, etc. And so I would like to think a hallmark of good silviculture would be where it is difficult for someone to go in and really put a label on it.
This is a prescription that we follow.
You follow a prescription, whether it's right or wrong, uphill or downhill.
Yeah.
This is the size opening.
I think that's why we fell into this concept of a continuum.
Because I think what we really want to do is to enhance the growth of the biggest, best trees. And move it into a sort of different kind of silviculture, where you're trying to upgrade the quality and the redwood growth potential, etc. So I think it would be desirable for it to be difficult to say, well, we've applied this method.
I'd like to say that what you stated is a goal, is something like
this
part, which is a silvicultural method that improves the best trees,
yeah,
grows the forest.
And so I want to put the emphasis away from we're applying a group selection or a cluster of this characteristic, because on the ground it's going to depend upon stand composition and condition, etc. There may be an overarching general principle, but how it's applied on the ground, I think will be highly variable.
All it does is gives the forest manager the a spectrum to manage within.
Yes.
And the only downside to it is that it makes life very, very difficult for your modelers.
Yes.
And the predicting outputs using modeling, because you tend to manage micro site. I will tell you though that over time, that type of management will, you know, the averaging will occur, and you probably will be able to predict very well with it.
If it's a large enough area, you won't be able to do it by stand.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But you can do it by maybe a watershed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the innovation that we're looking for. Impact on a larger scale.
And if you think about it, this actually lends itself much better to their existing inventory system than a stand-based inventory.
You may have to increase the number of plots, I would think.
Because their inventory is more of a
landscape
level.
That they gridded it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll pick up. It can pick up wide variations.
Yeah, so long as the number of plots, the frequency of sampling is high enough.
We actually wanted two to four times higher, but it's a matter of funding that.
Yeah. See, this is
well, if we just cut more trees, Mark,
we can go then our we can go to a smaller stand, of course, with it. Discern a smaller stand.
It seems like what you do in your general approach is kind of very close to what John was talking about, except that you reach some limit and you take the trees down. But it is always going into stands with an idea of improving what is left. Right? Isn't that accurate?
Yeah.
At some point, you figure in your scheme that you're going to do some regenerating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you do regeneration in your scheme?
Very small openings. We take the trees on the south side of the clump and maybe a fir or hardwoods that are on that south side open up that clump. If it's more Doug fir, then as we talked the other day, you know, we may make a little opening less than fifth of an acre and leave a couple bigger trees in there with the fir. And I've had fairly good luck with, you know, Doug fir. But again, I'm much more on the west side. Most of the properties we manage, we don't have a whole lot of stuff on that far east side.
But neither does today. I mean, if you go right, I mean, when I look east of Chamberlain, everything there.
It's about a third.
What's Craig doing out on that property that's...
Wagers or Springs?
Yeah, what's he doing at Wagers?
Right now he's salvaging a bunch of timber.
I got to talk to him right after you yesterday. But
did he call?
Yeah. What was his theme before the burn?
Pretty much the same.
Even that far to the east?
Because
on a north-facing slope.
Well, and a lot of those stands are... it's redwood and tan oak more than redwood and fir.
Fir?
Yeah.
What's he doing with the tan oak?
Well, private landowners, a lot of them don't want to use herbicides.
Are they cutting it, though? Or
they're cutting it in places, okay. Yeah.
Are they leaving it? What are they doing with it? Firewood?
It's been a mix of leaving it, especially the smaller stuff, and then we let one of the loggers come in and take firewood.
And then that's one thing I neglected to say, that in the east side, I had a sidebar note that hardwood would be treated.
I was just going to bring that up, is that that's part of the allegation in the question as well. And,
yeah. You know, now, pure hardwood stands, right. You'd assess and you'd manage them as hardwood stands, but within conifer stand, treatment would be required.
Right. And I would say, from my perspective, some of those hardwood stands that are inherently conifer stands ought to be left as hardwoods. So that's part of the allocation. It's a serial stage of that community that merits some level of representation on the forest.
Are you saying some of the within stand hardwood should be?
Some of the stands that are inherently conifer types should be left, if they're currently hardwood, should be left as currently hardwood, not treated, because it's representative of several stages present.
We won't capture that in some of the set-aside stands?
There virtually are none of those. Right? It's just virtually everything's conifer-dominated out there because we haven't gone back as many times as the industrial neighbors.
No, I've been to a few of them on Jackson, so there are some of them that are pretty heavy.
Well, there's heavy, but they're conifer-dominated.
Right. I wouldn't. My point is that I wouldn't want to make a blanket statement that
all hardwood species.
All hardwood.
I don't think what Mike was saying was that it would be the individual hardwoods in the mostly right. Within the conifer stand that you would want.
Yeah, and then you wouldn't eliminate them all. And then when I say treatment, I don't mean chemicals.
Right, and again, there ought to be stands where we allow. There ought to be stands where we allow the tan oak to be a very strong component.
Mike, can I come back to the question you asked Linwood?
You asked me something about what would you do about regeneration. I would just refine the response. I would give you a hedged answer on that, because it depends whether you want regeneration to occur or whether you want that regeneration to grow and become a significant component of the stand, because that's
two different things.
Great. So I think you get regeneration, but it might just sit there. And so one has to look ahead and say, look, I'm trying to get a species composition, and it consists of these species with different microclimate demands. There's one demand for establishment, but there's another one to get beyond establishment and become a significant component.
Yeah. So when you first went out there, you do this assessment of, do I need to do something in the stand to be able to insert a component that is not here? Therefore, I need some regeneration. Or are all my components here? I'm just managing those components for where I want to go with it. I think it's...
And if you want to add a component through regeneration, are you happy to have it regenerate and just sit there?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you really want it to develop and become a significant component?
Sooner than
which will require a little more space.
And the time element. Because, I mean, you know, we're happy a lot of times to have stuff sit there knowing that in, you know, 10, 15, 30 years down the road, we're going to take something else around it. It's going to release and it takes
off. So you're not going to lose it. That's critical in the way we manage it.
So is it kind of like it sits there, but it's developing its root structure and stuff more so when you release it?
But not all trees will release.
No, I was going to say, that's redwood.
Redwood will release.
I've seen fir release.
Fir releases up until about 20 years.
Yeah.
It will release.
Young stands will.
If you leave it out too long, though, it won't release.
I've seen some others that would amaze you.
Well, they do release, but they release primarily from, they're limited. Redwood can release up
and
sideways, down. Douglas fir will go a little bit out and primarily up, so it's going to be a slower response, but it will release if it's a good tree.
Well, and I think one of the issues, at least for, again, for this is because it is, again, we're thinking about the long term here. And I think it's good that we have a different time scale than a commercial foresters that, where they're demanding high rates of, they need some higher rate of return than I think we really need in the public forest. We need to, so if we're thinking about, you know, that this forest is going to be here for hundreds and hundreds of years, that we'd like to have it developing in a way that we can afford to wait 20 years or 30 years or something, be sitting there to do its thing at the next time.
I think you're right, but I am not willing to sit here and make a statement that it's X or Y until we go through the next stage of analyzing the impacts of how long these periods are. I mean, intuitively, Vince, I know you're right, but it's what are the impacts, and I think all of us need to be informed about that.
So, Mike, so basically what you're doing is removing the blue, yellow, and brown and replacing it with a rainbow.
That's great.
An east-west or a site-related.
Site-related.
We can't draw it up there. We can just describe it.
Mm-hmm. For the public, though, it's something as a description, I think, that they can clearly understand.
I think one of the things that's going to be key for me to be comfortable with this is a very clear description, because when you say 10 acres, there is such a history of whatever it says is the maximum is what happens. And so this description of how the mental process occurs, that it's up to 10 acres, that really could mean it's 2 acres. And so I think that has to be very carefully documented, especially over time when we're all gone and, you know, there's somebody else both looking at the forest and running the forest. So that's one thing I think we're going to have to be very careful about. And then a second thing, I'm wondering, did you all think about your conception about what you have in mind for the retained trees in the group openings? Are you assuming they will be harvested? Are you assuming they will be retained over time? Or is that a mix, or did you think about
that? We didn't get that far. I mean, I can tell you from a practitioner standpoint,
yeah,
what we do at MRC is a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
Permanent and temporal.
Yeah, I would assume that. So,
I don't know if this is getting too far ahead, but it's along the lines of Kathy's comments. It seems like if we were to adopt some version of this thematic approach to managing Jackson, that along with whatever allocation recommendations are given to the director, that we also suggest this group, maybe the full JAG, I'm not sure, but suggest that as part of implementing this thematic approach, that there be the appropriate staffing allocations to communicate the underlying motive behind the approach to the local community and the broader community. I don't know whether that's additional staff positions or what have you, but to really put in place, you know, the person power to
share the public education compound.
On a project at a project level, that as you actually go to implement this, every time you have a project, you've got somebody there communicating exactly how this area here ties to back to the theme.
That and the fact that it's an acknowledged experiment that has a data system feeding into it. So going back to John's idea of essentially modifying or bolstering the inventory system so that it's every time you present, as you say, a project, it's tied back to the theme, and you know it's clearly communicated that there are unknowns, but that this is not a 100-year plan. It's probably not even a 50-year plan. It's, you know, something shorter than that that has certain assumptions built into it that are going to be tested with data from the forest.
Whether or not it's research related or demonstration related.
That's right.
There'd still be some information monitoring.
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful. And then the other bit, just as an idea, is to, you know, if we get down to the point where we've got some sort of emulation forestry theme across the entire landscape that we just really consider. I believe strongly in the power of external vetting and getting some other folks on board who, you know, from outside this group to say, you know, review the objectives, review the intent, and compare it to, you know, a slightly broader base of information. There's some information from other systems, for example, on replacement rates of trees, you know, that underpin other models that have been developed along these lines. So bringing folks in, it'll garner strength behind it.
Now, I have a question for Mark that I think is very relevant to Vince's expressed concerns here. And that is, if we are thinking in terms of this thematic management scheme on what I'm going to call the matrix acres. Granted, now we're going to agree on allocation for the old and the late, but this is for the rest of the forest, excluding extreme West End issues. Right now, today, as you sit here, what do you have in your tool book where we could run some sensitivity testing of this idea to see what happens when you vary the entry intervals from 10 years to 40 years, say?
What we currently have available is, as far as I believe, available is yield streams from our option A that ran a number of silvicultural systems forward 100 years. Of course, you're recognizing that once you're past about 20, you're clear outside of the realm of cryptos. You know, we all know this, but the rules make us do it. So we have the yield streams, and we can compare those across the land. That would be the way we would have to do it. We take the existing yield streams and their output and tie them to a piece of land.
Yeah, so...
And then we change them in and out. Yeah, we have to.
Okay.
We can't get specific to... We can't take the have you draw polygons and then take all the inventory plots in there and put those into cryptos and independent. That would take forever.
And I don't think that would really serve our interests here initially, when we're just trying to understand the implications of things we're discussing in terms of timing intervals.
Yeah, and we have those yield streams right now are tied to timber type polygons. So if you have the same timber type on the east as you do the west, they're both going to be considered the same. It's not spatially explicit in that regard.
But we could say, hey, generally over on the east side, we think stands kind of look like this. Let's run our 10-acre opening extreme on that end and see what happens over there on a given acre that looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, good.
We probably have run every silvicultural system on every veg polygon we have, every type we have. So we've got a mass of them.
And just to, you know, the idea of a 10-acre clear cut, if you will. I mean, I know that makes some people nervous. In the management plan, clear cutting is limited to 100 acres per decade.
Well, right. But, I mean, as we sit here, I think the ideas of the management plan can be modified.
Well, I know, but I don't know. I don't see us being more aggressive than what's in the management plan.
No. So it's a very small amount.
Yes. Yes.
And it would be tied back to a definitive research project.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that the, was the 100, remind me, there was the original remark, and then there was about the clear-cutting total, and then there was, except when...
There was an allowance to go up to 500 per decade with specific research.
Okay, yes. That's what I was trying to remember. There was that, and then there was that. Okay.
Yeah.
That, which is still a very low number.
I was just trying to remember which, that number, that 100 represented.
Yeah, the 100 is the basic, and then up to an additional 400 for specific research.
So
that cannot be a decade.
So 50 acres a year could potentially be.
So coming back to the kind of, I mean, we really are talking about silviculture as a way to get to the allocation. You know, based on the various discussion that I've been having via emails with Mike Fay and Holderman and Jim Abel, and I guess Greg hasn't gotten into that. But, you know, these people are all very supportive of the idea that this kind of thing from below that you do, pretty much, is really the preferred silvicultural practice, even though it's not really widely adopted. And it seems like, from my point of view, some variation of that. I mean, the idea of growing it all the way back to old growth while you're doing this is, in a sense, one variation of this. I mean, you start off in sort of the same way, almost, at this point in time, if you're going to grow it back or if you're just going to get to a certain size limit and recycle it or whatever. And I'm just wondering, is there some reason not to adopt that kind of silvicultural model as the basic silvicultural model for the forest, other than for research purposes? So I guess
guys like to hear from us.
I think it really depends. I think what you need to weigh is the effects on forest structure of a certain minimum, you know, agreed upon revenue need, and then in parallel compare effects on structure from the perspective of replacement rates in an ancient resettlement forest. And at the end of that analysis, that modeling exercise with all the caveats of, you know, incomplete data, you might end up concluding that the answer to your question is no. Maybe the two aren't mutually exclusive at all. Or maybe they are.
Where would you think they might, what might be, where would the problem arise?
To where there might be a problem?
Yeah.
If the economic balance is such that with the interval included, that the openings foreclose opportunities to achieve a specific long-term forest structure. That's where there could be a problem. Right?
It is. My comment is that it's already the majority. The predominant system utilized on Jackson is a single tree selection or a thinning. And I said, from what I heard about this continuum, that these two have proposed their straw man is basically would also be, if you look at it on balance. So
are you saying that's good?
I didn't say default. You said default, so right. You want always to fall back to that. I'm just saying that the predominant.
Right. And is there a reason that it not be the default? That's what
there
I'm
are
thinking.
Probably lots of reasons why it may not be the default. And Dan, following up on Dan, said it might not pattern anything natural. It doesn't demonstrate much to the region other than a single form of silviculture. I mean, there are lots of reasons. Everybody doesn't want to do that, and I don't, you know, well, why would this entire public force dedicated to research and demonstration want to follow one default pattern?
Well, you know, I've been part of those emails, right. Not always participating, but definitely reading and listening. And I think that what's being proposed is exactly the silvicultural overlay that we're going to do on what looks to be more than a third of the forest by the time we finally get that allocation done that we've been etching out, which I think is a significant dedication to one form of silviculture for a demonstration forest.
And what I hear that emulating is a forest with frequent understory burns, essentially removing your harvest from below is what you're emulating there. And what it's not providing compared to a natural situation is the trees that are retained may not be the ones that would be retained naturally in terms of the dams bring up structure. I don't know if you're talking about landscape structure or tree structure, but oftentimes in those kinds of silviculture, they're trying to take out the ugly trees. They want the big trees to grow bigger, and it's not necessarily the ugly trees that might have been retained and providing the wildlife habitat and the values there. So,
beauty's in the eye of the beholder, Brad.
Yeah. I've seen places that are managed like those emails, and some of them are not very good wildlife habitat. They're not.
No, Lowell Diller would be the first to say that he's run into a lot of thin country, and there's darn near spotted owls there.
Well, and that bears out with your spotted owl populations at Jackson right now, compared to what's around you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I think, you know, Steve has mentioned that in some of the emails, is that the structural complexity is... Something that you scratch your head as a manager, how you're going to
get it introduced into the stand, but you have to think about that.
Right. Well, I wasn't exactly thinking of Dale Holderman's model.
No.
I mean, that wasn't what I was thinking of. It's what I would like to see. But it seemed to me that it's the basis for a lot of variations is looking at the forest in that way of, and I thought what we did in the late Searle committee is like to me that's a variation of that, of kind of going in and looking at the trees, what you want to favor, and keeping random variation and stuff so that you're kind of trying to emulate more of what would naturally evolve in forest, and at the same time taking timber out. And so that kind of silvicultural thing that maybe we had for the late Searle committee is a prescription that could be is a starting point and then varied from that to still create both the revenue stream and the kind of like evolution of the forest in a way that matches the kind of historical patterning that we're wanting to get at.
Yeah, I still think the key issue is the interval issue and how it affects structure, because there we might, by virtue of running simulations on the straw man that's been presented, find that even with maximal implementation, you don't foreclose any opportunities to achieve the kind of structural goals that I think you have in mind over a period of time that is generous with respect to when the next plan revision is going to happen. I mean, that's the myth.
Could you say that a little more close, directly?
Sure. So if we run the thematic models with different intervals across the landscape, and we select the most, from a harvesting perspective, the most aggressive
interval.
And we look at the effects of that most aggressive scenario on the forest structure across the entire landscape, we might find, I don't know if this is true, but we might find that you haven't taken enough away from the overall forest structure so that you're foreclosing adopting what you're saying in, say, 50 years or 40 years. I don't know this to be true. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility that we should evaluate because you're what you're advocating for, as I understand it, Vince, might end up being the purpose of Jackson 30 years from now, 50 years from now. It might be, or it might not be. We have no idea whatsoever. But if what we can put forward is an approach that moves the whole forest in that direction without taking away any opportunities to let the next set of managers take on that same challenge with more information, then I would be very supportive of that.
So would I be.
Yeah. And whilst recognizing also that, you know, it's the client, in my mind, the client base is pretty important too. There's, you know, there is a lot of forest out there that stands to be affected and informed by what happens at Jackson. And if it is one default system, then I think it becomes less and less relevant. So I think there's a balancing act there.
I think there'd be a lot of variance within the kind of default, though. It's not one size doesn't fit all. Yeah. Anyway, so I mean, it doesn't fit all parts of the forest. So.
Right.
Organizational question. 5 to 12. Were we contemplating as a group breaking for lunch, or just Orkin. Does anybody in the room have an objection, a major objection, to the thematic scheme that we forwarded here? Keeping in mind that, you know, the temporal element of thing is going to drive whether you manage to a very, very old forest or back to the other extreme being a commercial forest.
You mean the temporal?
How long you grow the trees.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You'd still do this kind of, over on this side is managed differently than over on this side. Opening sizes change depending on which side you're on. So if we're all okay with that, that is a step forward.
I'll abstain, not being a member of the committee.
Being a member, you're abstaining?
You don't have.
Very politic.
I'd like, you know, you're going to have to implement something like this, so I'd like to hear your
well, thoughts. I have, and a lot of my thoughts are in here too. Okay. So,
I think it's exactly what we asked you to do. So, I've found a lot of agreement in the things that I've heard you guys talking about. So, sounds good to me.
All right.
I think it's very good to try to tie what we recommend to. I mean, Brad was saying that. I agree that tying it to some rationale that's based on biological, historical, logical things.
Then what I'm going to suggest next is then that we focus a little bit of time on what scenarios we feel we would like to have modeled from which then we could carry on the discussion about, you know, what the temporal scheme of this thing. I think that, John, plays into our development of our work plan, too.
I would also add that the temporal issue, from my perspective, I would like to see that variable as well.
Agreed.
Rather than a default temporal stand. We need to be, in my view, looking at recession demonstration with a variety of temporal approaches, but always with an outcome-driven rationale, not a we're going to apply these methods and see what happens.
I have a question about outcome-driven rationale. Vince has got one outcome that he brings up regularly, which is having the whole forest basically running as older and older trees. What would be another outcome-driven rationale?
A diversity of stand structures.
Okay, that lets that so
early, mid, late, zero.
Okay, so that's so broad as to, in my mind, be very hard to gain these sort of directions from?
Well, it would be distinct from a sort of single approach moving towards older trees on the whole forest. I would like discussion on variable levels of what you might mean by old. Or I would probably put it into size. What size are we shooting? As opposed to maximum size. Variable size levels. Do we want to have a diversity of these? Such that if one was running some version of uneven age single tree selection or a variant, what is the largest size tree that is being planned for? And I'd like some variability in that.
Okay. I understand a little more now.
Can I ask John a question?
Please.
How does what you're suggesting vary from what I think may be another way to look at this? And that is the variation of the carrying capacity over time. So a management scheme that says you start with this inventory on this block, and your management maintains that inventory. Another one which says you start with this inventory on the block, and your management builds inventory at this rate, i.e. doubles its inventory over a 50-year period. And then another management scheme that says you do this and you double your inventory over a 100-year period. So you do the same thing you're talking about, but you do it by managing your inventories. Because I don't think the public is going to tolerate the other one more scenario, which is the you start with this inventory and you reduce it down to this carrying capacity and then maintain it. Though that might set itself up for one of our science experiments. I don't know that as a theme on the forest they caught into it very well.
Yeah, I don't warm to that either. but I would seek clarification about this the carrying of volume. Because I'm easy to think, well, I can have the same amount of volume on a few large trees or a hell of a lot of small trees. And I think one of the things that I think ought to be prominent is moving towards larger, older trees. How large and how old could be discussed. One is to have it as old as it possibly could grow. And there could be other levels backed off from that. But I think I would need help in addressing your question in terms of science classes as well as volume.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. You're right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's true you could have it in smaller trees or bigger trees, but you can't have really high volume with very young trees.
That is true.
There's a point at which you run out of density.
And I mean, I thought one of the things that came across that I wasn't really aware of, that I think Jim Abel said, the thing old timers up in Humboldt used to talk about, the 500,000 board foot per acre stocking level stuff there. Site two.
Well, Bull Creek Flats a million.
No, but that's not site two.
No, site two.
One plus or something like that, you know, whatever.
Sure. Yeah. So this is a unique thing about redwood, which we're not managing pine trees.
Right.
And so I would like to see, which I think is where we're headed here, is that the management will be towards larger, bigger trees, and probably more volume. But because the forest, as I understand it, is a research and demonstration forest, we're not seeking optimum management of the forest, the best possible thing we can think of. Because rather, we are trying to suggest a way to manage this forest for research and demonstration, which to me means diversity. But the diversity that I'm thinking of is going to be more towards more stocking and larger trees.
Vince, in your analyzing the situation, does the tree diameter automatically go up as your stocking per acre goes up? Does it trend that way to address John's issue?
Well, in the in that little simple, only one simple model that I've really been able to put together so far. It does, in the sense that the volume grows and the number of trees doesn't grow, so the diameter obviously is growing.
Mark, what's your experience?
The relationship between size of trees and volume on an acre?
Volume per acre, size of tree. If we were to set volume per acre targets, you know, target volume per acre targets, and were we to set for some very high volumes per acre, would it drive large tree size if we set them up high enough?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll drive large tree size. It won't tell you much about productivity because it won't deal with the rates.
Absolutely.
But obviously, yeah, as you can only stack so much wood out there, so as the tree size gets larger, you have to have fewer numbers.
Or as your volume per acre gets up there, you're putting volume on less and less trees.
On fewer trees.
I think partly you get them taller, too. I mean, that's partly, when they're short, you're kind of limited, you know what I'm saying, by how many you can press put in there.
Multiply your base layer increment times 2, roughly, and you probably get your volume, you know, within a range of age class.
So one way to do an allocation across this band, the rainbow band that we talked about, would be to set up what we'll call terminal volume per acre targets. I'm just throwing it out.
Alternatively to that, I'm trying to think of an alternative, would be to set terminal size class. I can't think of another alternative.
Mm-hmm. It's either one or the other.
Or a combination of the two.
The one thing that about the volume per acre is right or wrong, we've got some regional growth curves available to us. That, you know, I don't know if they're relevant.
We do have. Where do those get
sent? Well, I mean, there's the old link with some poly work, and that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Where we could actually look and say, well, here's what they studied. This is within the realm of reality. That's where I want to stay within the realm of reality. If we say that parts of Jackson are capable of developing inventories in the 300,000 to the acre, I'd like to know that that ties back to something that biologically is doable. It's the only reason I throw it out there.
So your thought then with this terminal designation would be that it would be based on site class, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you'd have different endpoints by site class.
Which kind of plays into this banding thing that we've been talking about.
Right.
And then from a standpoint of demonstration, I think landowners, whether they do it, you know, that's the number because they really studied this and are well coached by their foresters. That's where I want them. That's the target I want to manage for my lands. They do kind of think in those terms, and there are trade-offs. The higher amount of carrying capacity that you want to keep on your property, the less annual production you're going to have on the property. So your time horizon as an owner changes. So if we had a forest where a landowner could go out and look at that theme of management, that's true demonstration.
And what you're describing would involve time, because the more volume the target is, then it's a longer time horizon,
right?
Depending upon site quality, but you're going to get there.
And the nice thing about that is then it allows, again, the forest manager to go look at the stands he's looking at. And in those older stands, you know, the automatic
thought that a guy, I think, would have would be, I've already got an advanced age stand here, so from a demonstration standpoint, I can put this one out further and answer questions for landowners sooner in my older stands. Now, we also have our set-asides that we're going to be able to do a certain amount of that in, so that's maybe where they're going to demonstrate that piece of this.
Well, if you're going to give me a target of volume per time, I can reach that target quicker by not cutting anything. Right? Mm-hmm. And so it's going to force management to no cutting.
Yeah, I agree. What landowners want to do on the private side is get to a high level of productivity, which is going to be a marriage between the rate at which things grow and the amount that you carry.
Yeah.
And our old stands, our even age, is going to take quite a while to get them in that sustainable. You kind of want to, not culmination of mean annual increment, you probably want to culminate a periodic annual increment. That's what you're trying to do.
Whereas if you give me a size that you want me to get, I can get to that size, largest size tree quicker by releasing that tree and giving it space to grow. And it'll put me into the business of, a healthier forest.
So is it true that you can't do better than let it, in terms of volume growth?
Control plots always have the most volume.
Oh, wow.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. Underline. Capital letters.
Damn, that's sobering.
That's an important fact.
It may have the least value.
I understand.
But because the trees are all small.
Right.
There's a caveat to that, and that's a species mix, though, John, because in our mixed species stand, the Douglas fir will start to, it's going to respond at a different rate.
And I was going to ask, is that true over long periods? Probably haven't been studied. Are they approaching each other after 20 years, or is it constantly a constant amount higher over time?
It depends whether you count mortality. That's the issue.
And whether the owner captures value out of mortality.
Whether you capture mortality. And that's the whole premise of thinning, is that I can get more volume by management because I'm capturing mortality. Apart from the mortality you want to be there, the snags and whatever. And so in time, the managed forest will have more usable, have more volume, simply because you're capturing the mortality. The biomass is, productivity is always highest on an uncut stand, if you include the mortality.
There's tremendous, the thinning trials conducted on Jackson also show that there's enormous plasticity within even age stands, such that over, I think it was 25 or 30 years, you don't see much in the way of volume differences despite
total productivity.
Total productivity.
You count your harvest with what you've left, they're virtually on a plane until you get you start to get the basal area down, removal down below 50%.
Right.
But what the trouble with all of our studies is that we might have 10 subplots in there. We find that as we study this further, that the site differential is so different from, if you move 100 feet, you could move an entire site range, and that's often what affects your results.
Yeah.
That's
good to know. Yeah.
So, Mike, I get very nervous about the postulation about the teams based on attaining volume.
But I think the other thing is, too, just what we've talked about here before is, in a way, we're only making recommendations that are really have a lifetime. I mean, if our recommendations have a lifetime of 20 years, that's a long time for anybody, any group's recommendations. But before much difference shows up in the forest, we say, well, it's 50 years. You know, or so really what we're maybe more concerned about is setting things on the right path, not foreclosing options, doing things that make sense over the next 20 years.
But I think we should be characterizing things at a longer time frame
I don't disagree
while recognizing that
practical. I agree. that 100%. I mean, there's nuance in the communication.
I mean, I think our long-term landscape plan is what we're here to do, and to have the rationale for it,
right,
the underpinnings to the most that we can. But also in terms of our kind of civil cultural recommendations, unless we do something really bad, we're probably going to set it on a time path that's consistent with quite a lot of different futures. And if we're gathering information, my ideas, of course, I'd like to gather a lot of information over this next 20 years about what's happening, and then extend it to maybe 50, so that our collection of information really tells us a lot. Can we keep moving up the scale of productivity, for example, and older forests simultaneously? So we're moving, but you know, people haven't been doing it for really long enough, or with that in mind, other than to getting to sort of a steady state, this kind of steady state right now. Terms of the people who are having this 100-year kind of rotation idea, maybe, or something. Can we do better than that?
So can I come back to where this conversation sort of started? Because I think it was an important distinction. Kathy asked John, what does he mean by something different than the optimization scheme? John said a mix of zero stages. We had some clarification in that. Mike threw out this terminal volume target idea. There are some problems with that. We have the terminal size idea out there. And I'm thinking geographically, how does this tie back to the blue and the tan space that we've been discussing? Because I think it's a really good clarification. I think, you know, putting some sidebars on the nuance between these different ideas is really important. But how does anyone have any proposal as to how these concepts would apply?
Well, when I was thinking about it, when I had that idea about, you know, your targeted terminal volume per acre, you could set up like 3 to 5. This is what we want to manage towards, and you do that based on, you know, where it was biologically attainable on the property. So you just overlay the site there. And that's what you do within the context of what we worked on this morning. Then it avoids drawing any hard lines necessarily on the map. But it causes the forest manager, whenever he's at a project level, to go in and go, okay, I am in this site class potential. Here's what my options are, and this is where I am demonstrating this one facet of this. And that has huge ramifications for future, because if, in fact, in this management unit, this is one that is chosen to attain very high volumes per acre at the end of it, that's going to drive, you know, entries and what they mark and all of that.
So what I hear you describe...
But I don't know. But there again, John's idea of tree sizing, where you may be able to do the exact same thing, and maybe it's better to do it that way. But that's how I feel.
Yeah, the advantage to me at this level of my thinking is that when I'm concentrating on tree size, I'm looking at value and large trees. I don't want to be forced into looking for volume, forcing me to keep a very dense forest where the value of the forest is low. The volume is not worth very much. And it's probably not very good habitat. And so I find that the volume target to be very constraining for aesthetics, for wild, for habitat, for timber. It's undoubtedly a component, but I wouldn't like it held up as without more of a better understanding as a target of three levels.
Yeah. Does height enter into this at all? I mean, I remember having it drilled into me that you can't tell
the size of an age of a redwood by its diameter, but you might be able to tell a little more by its height. So is there something about height and all those old linguistic valley charts and stuff that would help us in trying to define anything?
Height is relatively independent of density until you have very dense sands. Then it becomes depressing. But in quotes, the normal ranges of stocking from zero up to full stocking, not over stagnation, but from zero to full stocking, the density doesn't have much effect on height growth.
It's the site that drives it.
It's the site that drives it.
And in redwood, it tends to be tied to moisture availability.
And for the biggest trees, it's the ability to get the water up to the top of the tree, and the wind affects up there.
Yeah, that too.
Mm-hmm. Evapotranspiration.
The difficulty in threading the terminal volume standard and the tree size standard is that there's tremendous variation in tree size based on the forest environment itself.
So let's kick that. Let's get off of that, because I don't think anybody here is thinking that's it's a track that we want to walk down. What are the other ways of thinking about this, Mr. Biologist?
Well, I'm actually suggesting something that I think the productivity argument has the most strength. I think site quality. If you want to create a biological basis for your endpoints, I think site productivity has a lot of merit, but it's constrained by what John is pointing out, and that is the quality of the forest and what it looks like while you're getting to that target. I don't have an answer yet, but I'm thinking that the productivity classes describe the what, really help describe the goal. And the emulation practices and the gap sizes that you and Linwood put together describe the how. And in describing the what, that's what we're really focused on for the moment. What is the future condition? I think there's a variety of ways you can describe that. You can either describe it purely from a biological perspective, or you can use, I think the answer is something in terms of describing that plus an aesthetic component that reflects, the operational realities and goals inherent in managing the forest. But it seems like more of a communication issue to me than it is an actual operational issue. I think net primary, the underlying productivity is a good bit, but it's how do you...
John, when you say that stands that are just allowed to grow back naturally may have low value timber because they're smaller, are you talking about timber or value or habitat? Because it doesn't seem to me... 100-year-old tree. I mean, I know the ones down around the Woodlands are very dense. I think they have very high stocking there too. Somebody said, I thought it was say 100,000 or feet. Maybe that's an overestimate. But I thought I remembered hearing that. But they were very small trees. His point was, even though they're small trees, they're very dense. And so, kind of per acre, I don't know, is a small tree worth that much less from a timber standpoint? Or are you talking about something else? I mean, I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, Mike can answer this better than I, but there's not that much relationship between price and diameter.
No more. There used to be. Yeah.
And so it's more different if we're in redwood with sapwood versus heartwood.
Mm-hmm. So why don't we throw out the old standard of productivity and for Jackson redefine good productivity as what happens at the scale of the stand or even the individual tree or small group of tree at the end probably at the scale of the individual tree. So in other words, if the main challenge between the terminal volume categories and the big tree terminal categories is this stocking issue, throw that away. Throw away the stocking as a measure of productivity, and instead adopt a new measure of productivity for the forest that focuses on the increment of the tree or something smaller in scale, so that we're focusing not on such a broad stand-by-stand scale, but we adopt some metric for the trees. Let's say, for a given redwood tree, it looks good if it has...
That is a very interesting concept. We would be taking a giant step towards something nobody's ever wanted to raise in second growth economy. And that is, you know, what is the optimum increment to grow a valuable redwood tree?
I need to go backwards to something you said, too. You said that there used to be a relationship between diameter and value, but that's not true anymore. Is that because of mill utilization, or...
Yeah.
But you're still... The red part of the tree...
Is worth
is
more.
Is still the worth more.
Yes.
So, you know, another... From a monetary measurement, being able to predict...
Well,
the increment increase in yeah. the red part of the redwood would be one way of measuring a monetary.
That's right. And I think that, you know, trees with more red in it are always going to find a higher dollar. It's, you know, whether it's $100 or $300.
Mm-hmm.
Differential.
Or $25, $50.
Yeah. You have to marry, you have to marry that with the time it takes to produce it.
Of course.
Yeah. If the time it takes to produce it overwhelms the value of the increase in red, mm-hmm. then you might as well not head down that path. I don't think you can come up with an optimum. I mean, the optimum for growing red is probably very slow.
Right.
Very, very, very low rate of growth.
We're having inside our business a raging debate over this right now. You know, and there are so many assumptions that can be made, and so many things that should be looked at. It'd be a tough one for this group, but it's relevant. It's very relevant.
Well, we used to have these arguments too. People would say you don't want to release trees because then, you know, you're just creating this tree with all the sapwood. True, but by the same token, by releasing trees, you're creating more red faster, and it actually produced more red. The rings were wider, so that's another quality component that varies.
Mm-hmm.
But you put on more red when trees are going faster. So.
Yeah.
You put on more white, too.
Maybe that's part of the range of variability we want to try to accommodate at the forest.
That would have been my comment, is not try to get too specific about what we do, because... You know, you don't want to set too tight of sidebars on the management of a forest like this because we don't know enough about how uneven age stands develop over time.
But we could find out.
We wouldn't find out over time, yes.
So what, you know, we're already going to take our old structure, late Cyril and old growth stands and manage them to be very old and very big. So that riddle is going to be answered by the allocation that we're near completion on.
Sure.
So in your view, what question do you ask and answer on the rest of the forest in the context of what we talked about this morning?
It's such a such a broad host of questions that I can't begin. It's how to obtain a high rate of growth, how to obtain a high level of value, how to create various habitats at the same time, and how do those interrelate? What are the effects on the watersheds of doing these various things? So that's one reason why the management plan is not as constraining. then it's, it becomes a matter of trust. Can the managers be trusted to stay within a range that that the public finds acceptable? And
that's, and I think that's kind of our charge, is to put some brackets on that to the point at which the public will trust that. And I know that, that, you know, at this point, unfortunately, you know, leaving it to CAL FIRE to set those brackets probably has been the raging debate. And, I, you know, I think that we can. I'm not in favor of bracketing you down significantly, especially with the dedication that we have already put on a large swath of it. Nor will I think the board go along with a recommendation that so tightly brackets what they can do on the rest of the forest. But I, you know, we're ending up in kind of a circular conversation about what to do next here.
Well, I've been kind of quiet just sitting here because I'm just trying to figure out how this question, if we can come up with an answer, is going to move us forward on what our job is. And that's the allocation part. And it seems like we've got pretty good grasp on one, two, maybe three or four different allocation types. Where else do we need to go with the allocation? I mean, why was this discussion, what were you hoping to achieve from what we were just talking about?
Further, to take the matrix acres that we overlaid with a management theme, and to see if there was any further stratification that we could overlay on that. It was my goal.
And I guess what I've gathered by listening to this is there's so much, it just, it's starting to complicate the issue, and maybe we shouldn't
do
go
it
there.
We might have consensus, less one on that. That does not meet Vince's overall goals, I don't believe.
Can I try a couple of little diagrams? That I try and think this leads with me. And this may or may not be helpful. I want to draw two kinds of diagrams. This is volume or facial area. And this is height. We are starting with a forest somewhere around about here. If this is 500 years, this thing is going to come up like this. And I think it's going to be that.
It left alone.
And this is net. The growth curve, and this is mortality. What we've tended to do in the Redwood region, let me just oversimplify this, is come in here at around about, let's call it 150 years or 100 years, and we tend to drop this thing down. It may be clear cut down to here, in which case it would come up. This curve would be roughly parallel to that one. And these might be asymptotic in time. And we've made varying decisions. It could come down to the ground, etc. And what we want to do here, I think, on Jackson, is to think about advancing this thing. Perhaps even out to 500 years. And from a research and demonstration standpoint, perhaps it would be nice to look at and give examples of how this forest develops if you have this kind of goal, if you have this kind of goal, if you have this kind of goal, in terms of the volume levels that you can attain. The alternative way of looking at this in uneven age management is where you've got a tree number as a function of, am I going to do the size? Time?
Number.
Well, it could be time. It could be time or volume.
Nutrition.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the way we had Brandon Gulch. We had something like this for Brandon. We have Casper Creek, which is something like this.
That's tree size, I think you're talking about. Diameter or something.
This is diameter.
Number of trees in diameter.
Thank you. And so this is, and this was Casper Creek. And the idea was to take Brandon and lower the numbers so that we could get these maximum diameters out. Now, these diameters could get out to what they would be at age 500, very large.
And you do that by looking around at the stump diameters.
And it would very much like quality.
We still have that history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so here's Brandon, which we're pushing in this direction. But we may only want diameters up to this point, which might be what they would be here. And then we might want some examples where we've got diameters out to here. And we may want to have become a shoot for these kinds of forests. Now, to me, this gives me structure where I can demonstrate different approaches to management of the forest, where I've got diversity of structure, and the allocation issue is what proportion of the forest do we want with these kinds of diameters? What proportion of the forest do we want these? And what proportion do we want these? And so when I'm looking at the matrix area, what I would be arguing for, I think, is managing the forest with diversity in these two kinds of distributions.
Even though you know full well that in the allocations that we've already gone through, the extreme right-hand side of these charts is already addressed.
That's right. I've got a lot of that in the late series.
Right. So are you really saying you're going to throw some more of that into the matrix?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
Only if they would be in short supply in our stratification kind of thing. So,
I'm
not saying they are, but you might want to.
So just a quick clarification, though, you do have some of those in the matrix in the riparian zones.
You do.
Yes. They're there anyway.
Right. You know, if you read the management plan and the allocation thing that we handed out, here's the older forest structure zone kind of in.
Yes. Yes.
And here's the late serial you already have. The old forest structures, and then here's this that you can throw elements of this within that, you know, like your structure.
It's going to happen anyway.
The stream zone.
Yep.
Or escapees.
Yeah. So what you're really advocating for, if I hear you right, John, is kind of the way Linwood and Craig manage with their clients, and that is diameter targets.
I would probably want to have an extended range for these.
Yes.
So it's not a volume per acre target, it's diameter target.
Yeah. And you do it, we could say, in the matrix acres, a percentage of those matrix acres we're going to manage with a diameter target of 30 inch. A certain number we're going to go with 50 inch, and the balance to 60 inch.
You see, now, as a manager, I think I've got some incentive now to grow big trees.
And direction.
Yes.
Something you can actually go, here's what I have to do to get there. If I want to target, if this management unit has been
allocated to the 60-inch target tree classification, it informs the manager, the person writing the prescription for that at any point in time, of what it is they're going to do on the property.
But I don't think this is eliminating the issue of volume, because I want to be able to have some very dense, some big, heavy carrying capacity stands, which will mean I'm going to get my big trees quite a long time in the future.
Those areas would be the late sorrel.
We got the
or older forests.
Yes, because I'm not thinking of an allocation. I'm just thinking thematically.
Right.
So I don't want this matrix all by default saying we're going to get the biggest trees as quickly as possible, because I think I'm going to lower the stocking levels. My reaction would be to lower the stocking levels to get, like, immediately cut to and leave 50 trees.
That is one demonstration that I think needs to be tried out.
But I don't want to do it all over the property.
Correct.
No. But I want to have the option of doing it.
Correct.
That's why I'm trying
to... And this area, the swath we've been talking about today, is where the manager has the breadth of opening ability to try any number of those.
I'm a little bit in Linwood's camp. I don't think we need to go too far down this road. But if we can describe thematically what the idea is, then let people. I mean, I think there are. I don't want to prescribe the only ways you can go about doing this. Anyway,
I just want
to ask one other thing before you start, then.
Yeah.
Were you basically then throwing out chart number one and concentrating on the lower?
No, they both go together.
They both go together. Okay.
So, in terms of the shape of these curves, I noticed that you grew the curves like this, but isn't it true that really the trees grow so you have some kind of increasing volume for some period of time? Because otherwise you wouldn't have
correct. Yes.
Right. Somehow this has to grow faster than
the
average until you get to the culminating mean annual increment.
That's the sigmoidal at the left hand.
Right. But how far out does this go? I mean, that's the question. How far are we going like this before we start going like that? At what age?
Lindquist and Paley will tell you that.
Do they tell you for
Even age they do.
For even age.
Just for even age.
And what do they say then?
Well, it varies by site, and it'll start turning over at somewhere between 60 and 80 years.
It's a relatively, and I'm growing these
really
for 1,000 years.
So
it's a relatively short time.
Yeah. Right, with that, like was it Zimmer? Who did the thing for Kryptos?
That would be Kremlin and Wenzel.
And Wenzel, because he said that all the data that he collected never came to culminating mean annual increment over the range of data that they collected, which was up to 120 or 30 years or something.
There's only a couple of sites I know in the Redwood region where it's been documented. One is the Wonder Plot at about 8 years because it's site 220. And I think we've got a plot on Jackson that's culminated as well. But that's only on a very, very high site.
Site 2
is probably at 120, 130 years.
I would push it out. Yeah, and when you said first, I went, oh boy, my experience would tell me that that's out a little bit further than that.
Well, we actually we have the numbers.
Yeah. So, but what you're saying right now.
Oh,
right,
for the same two.
Yeah.
So you have two documented in some.
Three is probably down around
the
one site.
The conservation is. Fine, I think,
right.
Put that together.
I see.
I think the Lindquist and Paley go out to about age 150, and they all come
100.
100?
100.
Except the very low site qualities.
And they don't have any data on anything past 100 in their charts.
Is that right?
Yeah,
well, they've all culminated.
They have not. None have culminated except the highest, very highest sites. Yeah. Some of them have culminated in cubic, obviously culminates earlier. But in board foot level, they've
only
two highest sites have culminated.
I'm talking cubic.
Oh, yeah.
Real volume, not this. You mean the stuff the mills sell?
Okay, so if it's true, I'm just trying to get some model in my mind. If it's true that this stuff culminates at 150 years, say for Site 2, I'm just going to take that for a number. And what would we expect? I mean, right now, like Casper Creek, I mean, Brandon has like 80,000 board feet per acre, more or less. That's a number I saw somewhere. And so then, and that's 90. So 150, it might, if it's still increasing in growth, it might be 150,000 board feet. So this might be, like this 150, this might be 100, also like 150 board feet. And if it's going to get up to, what do we think it's going to get up to? We think it's going to get up to 300?
At what age?
At what age? At a ceiling level, whatever that is.
Depends on site quality.
Yeah. Well, site two, Brandon, yeah. Site two. So will it take 500 years to get there, or will it take 1,000? Does anybody have any thought about that?
Probably not.
So nobody's ever grown an even age stand of that size for 1,000.
So it'll only double. But anyway, it'll only double. From that to the 300 is appropriate, and I'm just trying to get a shape of what this curve might look like. That's all I'm trying to.
Well, it dawned on me as I walked out of the room. The one thing that has never been done, and personally, I think, in an uneven aged scheme, you have to ask the question: how far out does that culmination point get pushed?
Well, even the thinning, yeah. Even uneven age, thinning
that hasn't
even
been answered at all.
No, yeah. And that's it, yeah. It. In my mind, it that may is, not.
Yeah. Right, it might not. Yeah. So yeah, that's a key. Yeah.
Right. So that is a key, and the question is, if we're thinning in here, and we're taking some out, where do we really kind of get to the point of maximum production out of that? And it seems like that's going to keep getting pushed out because you've got higher volumes. So from a productivity standpoint, I mean, I'd love to be able to get a better modeling picture on this because obviously if you...
It's all dependent. Here's the key, Vince. It's all dependent on how you define productivity. If productivity is only matched, is only defined as your... captured volume in terms of revenue generation, that's one thing. If it is the combination of revenue generation plus volume added in the stand, that's something altogether different.
And you might want to weight them differently. That is, one's worth one amount, you know, just from a public standpoint. There's some value to standing trees. But it's not the same. It's different. I mean, it's like a store of value.
You can lay, and that's another way that you could do this stratification for, and it has land management implication. Are you interested in short-term cash generation as a manager versus are you interested in long-term land value, land and timber? Well, it just timber value. Take the land value out of it.
Well, I think Vince's have gone back out into the, once again, into the Lake Searle development area that you've allocated in the older forest structure zone.
No, because I'm thinking about having harvesting along this. That's my issue.
Well, so are we.
I thought Lake Searle, you said you'd harvest a couple of times and then you leave them alone. That's what we were talking about. That's what was the assumption that was being made. And that was why I thought then they don't have any contribution to maintaining the forest after, you know.
There is a point at which, I don't know how many entries you would have, but there's a point at which you would always want to be taking your mortality out of those stands, though, versus just...
Why would you want to do that? I mean, from a habitat point of view, you would not want to be removing mortality before it happened. Isn't that what you're saying?
It really depends on your ultimate goal, whether you're doing it for the Lake Searle habitat and forest conditions, or are you doing it for a demonstration of which is somehow paying for itself in some form.
And so you do a little of each. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, because if you think of the number, the stem exclusion concept in some of these stands, there's going to be more stem exclusion than actually is a healthy situation.
Yeah, at the beginning, and but at some point you get to
reach
the point
kind
where
of a balance.
You want the mortality.
Agreed, and I think that's what Vince is talking about too. When you reach that point of balance, then it is probably in a somewhat static state. As a manager, you go back and revisit that hypothesis now and then, but very little entry. It's a ways out, though. It's past your 50 years.
There is, it might be of interest, there is a body of literature within the plant ecology literature that speaks to the productivity issue in some detail, because plant ecologists are very interested in how vegetational communities are distributed over space and how succession will change those plant communities. And a subset in that overall theme of research is how do mixed species stands measure up with respect to productivity, and how do comparable compositional stands measure up in different structural classes. And it's there's some preliminary but very interesting findings. One is, for example, that site productivity actually increases with species diversity in many systems. That's just because you have a higher degree of
nitrogen productivity
through just
biomass.
Yeah.
Usually above ground biomass.
Sure. That makes sense, because you have many more choices of where you're going to put. If one fails, the other.
We do have value just for the carbon too in our day and age for having high volume. So that is a social value.
We don't have the.
Well, otherwise you've got to replace it with steel and concrete. Yeah.
I don't know. So.
But how the forest environment affects those numbers, i.e. selection, the long-term effects of selection, we have no idea.
And just how it's affected by when you cut things out. If it all regrows pretty fast, the volume you take out, I mean, I don't know, somebody was saying he cuts, I forget what it was, Holman or something, or some one of those people said whatever they cut out in 20 years it kind of grows back or something in terms of,
because
it releases that, you get that increased growth. Yeah, so you go dip down below the curve, but then you go back up to the curve.
And so I mean, by site three, that's usually a 13 to 15 year period if you're taking 30% of the stand. Okay, we all agree that you can recapture that.
So would you have?
But that's just to get back to the line.
Would you keep getting back to the line like that?
You'd only get back to the line. But by doing that, you wouldn't necessarily build that inventory.
Oh, you wouldn't build. You're not going up. You're not like going up this line like.
It'll never get back up to the line.
You'll never get back.
It'll never get up.
I see. So each time you do this, you move it out. Well, you wouldn't.
You move it out. Yeah, that's right. It's not never.
So you kind of go out,
eventually,
and then you move like that's sort of going kind of
that
like
exactly. You push, and you push it out.
Reduce the slope of the line.
So you reduce the slope.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, it goes right to what John impressed upon us, that the fastest way is to leave it alone.
That's right. That's what he said.
So back to our rainbow matrix.
Right, so now we need a lot more preservatives.
But this is...
we don't even know.
For forest landowners in the region, they want to know how they should position themselves on that jagged line that you... Or which jagged line to use.
And
And therefore, you, from my standpoint, I want a lot of jagged lines out there.
Yeah.
I'd like to have, in this one third.
Lots of jagged lines.
I'd like to have variability in of carrying capacity from medium to very dense and from various levels of maximum tree size. So that then I've got, then as a landowner or a researcher, or, and whether that researcher is involved in wildlife or whatever, I've got a diversity of stand structures that can relate to my needs. But I think the big advantage of redwood is that the size classes and the carrying capacity are going to be quite different than they are from the Sierra Nevada, from pine. We have a wonderful opportunity to capitalize on the inherent nature of redwood. And this gives us the, sort of the biological driver.
You know, I've got to ask Linwood's question again.
Have we
taken this far enough? Do we need to get down to any more specificity?
Yeah.
Right, what were you about to say?
Well, I was just going to say, from a research perspective, and take up on John's comment there, having a lot of different jagged lines, Jackson State may not be big enough to have enough replicates of a bunch of different lines. Yeah. I mean, we'll probably want to bracket and have two or three options that cover the range.
But you want low, medium, high.
Yeah, you want something like that. Because
in carrying capacity and maximum tree size.
So maybe another way to think about entering into this is like how far below the unmanaged curve do you come? I mean, and that depends upon your intensity of entry.
That is a key issue in forest management.
Right. So, like, if you entered a lot, you may just, well, you could keep it flat, right?
Yeah.
That was one scenario that I offered up as our absolute minimum scenario, because politically, to take it down below stocking where it exists right now, not politically acceptable.
Right.
So and that's then, that scenario. That
right. Way. And then depending upon how fast you enter and how much you cut, you can be closer and closer to this line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Less and less. At least that's a way of measuring, in a sense, what your impact is on the natural forest.
So does process.
Correct.
You see, what this curve does is what you're actually involved in doing is making a cut.
Right, I know. It's going to go down.
And then you're going to go up
and
do this.
Right.
Now, what we can choose is this interval of time and this proportionate cut.
Right.
And so we can do something that is relatively frequent like that, or something that is like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can say, well, we want it to stop here, or we want it to stop here, or we want it to... You can adjust this thing. What you can't do is get above this thing.
Right.
Yeah. And so the choices we've got in this one third is to give the flexibility or the freedom so that these levels can be tested, this interval can be tested, and this proportionate cut can be tested.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of reaching big tree size, overall value.
Well, and in terms of goal, if we say that the level, the ultimate level is...
Combine it with your opening size thing and just do it in a produce perspective.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
No. Okay, speak up, Mark. Say that louder.
Okay, Mark.
Mark has the floor.
Okay, I was saying, ask John to write up his high, medium, low stocking and tree size concept. You already
have, straw man.
As a straw man, combine it with this straw man where you've already got the basic idea was to limit opening size based upon some sort of legal biological needs of the forest or historic or what have you. You know, we might disagree about it, but then
obvious.
And then know, give the direction in that form, and you've and then you've moved somewhere.
Yeah, well, and I think Winwood and I are in agreement with you there.
Yes.
Vince, can I ask you to lead us on this little point you're making up here?
Okay.
Because what you've got there is correct so far. I mean,
right. Well, so the other thing I'm just trying to say, how do we express in some metric what we're value or put some kind of qualitative or quantitative measure on different approaches that we take? And one, and my thought is to say, well, how much are we going to be below what would be the natural progression of the forest without man's interference into it at all in terms of its violence?
Without man's first interference, or without interference from now on?
Well,
yes.
So you're measuring the difference
from now on.
Over time of what it looks like. So this strategy comes closer to being what the natural forest would be.
What the forest is going to do
on its own.
On its own.
Now.
Okay. Right. And then if you're also talking about having some maximum that you're going to aim for, so you come up to this level and you stop, then you might also measure it compared to what the potential level of the forest was. I put it up here because it's off the chart.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, because it's an end, then this is temporary, because eventually this one, if you left this one long enough, it would get up to the potential.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Eventually.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, unless you set arbitrarily some standard, but it's going to be pushed out in time further.
The only one that won't do that is one that says you're happy with your current stocking and you're going to continue to manage at that stocking level. You'll never build inventory.
Right, then you'll get somewhere.
It flat.
You'll have a line like this.
That's right.
Right. Well, and John was saying we'll set something like a line up here that we'll aim for in the future.
John was saying we'd set maybe three of those.
Different ones. And I'm just
and we've already got the potential one set. We've got a third of the forest doing that.
Right.
Doesn't look like a third of the forest to me.
But I think when we get our final line up there, I think you'll find that it will.
It's a third.
Especially with the other extreme zones.
Well, yeah, if you don't have the extreme zones.
So no, but with the other stuff, we may be surprised how much is in there. Okay.
But I think
there's a skeptically hopeful
suggestion articulated by Mark and John and Vince and Mike all together. I think that's
and Brad and you
Brad.
And Kevin. Everybody but Mark.
Oh, Mark suggested it.
No,
I just didn't agree with all of them.
Okay. I think writing that up would be a really good idea.
Okay. Can we shelve this discussion then from this point on and move on to something else until we see what the outcome of that is? And move
what
to...
What have I agreed to?
Just
articulating what you...
Articulating with graphs and verbal,
all right,
kind of what this looks like.
All right. For this rainbow area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The high, medium, low concept, you know, combined with the rainbow.
And when do you want this by?
Before our next meet. Will be our next meeting of the bigger group.
Yeah, I mean, you want us to... Ideally, the committee ought to see this a week before the next meeting.
Okay.
Practically
speaking,
you want this
3 days
before.
My boss is starting to ask questions.
If I keep Dan's hours, I can do this.
We have to stop meeting like this.
I don't want to talk to you. You're in a JAG meeting.
That's like your wife starting to ask questions.
Okay, that's kind of what I was joking. Similar theme.
Gee, my boss told me to go on my own. He couldn't afford to do this anymore.
The economy is hitting him too.
And so that was
the conversation I had with him yesterday.
So questions on our direction on how these different scenarios would lay out on the landscape would be a topic for a future discussion. Whether we do it by watershed or
cuts or are they even laid out?
Or do we even want to put it on a map or just give verbal?
I think I'm more in favor of a broader, mm-hmm. here's what you do, and then you make the decisions where you're going to do it, because we've given them the thematic on the other piece, that kind of the how-to.
Right.
They've got to figure out where.
I think it would be good to take at least some example and show, like take a watershed or something.
As an example
of how you think. It's just like when we went to Brandon Gold's and Camp Free. We learned a lot by actually trying to do something that fits on the ground.
Right.
Okay. Well, that would be like the research and demo areas, except you'd establish one someplace, or two of them, or three of them.
Where
you do the whole rainbow mm-hmm. within the sub watershed.
So you're just saying.
I'm just saying for our purposes of making our presentation of this to people so that we work through a little more what it really means.
Gives people a better idea about what this is.
It gives us a better idea when you actually take an area and go out here and say, okay, what do we think? How would this be managed?
Okay. This is a way it could be done.
So you know what that looks like? If in fact John ends up with three of these, what are we calling these things? The three
things.
These are tracks, though. They're kind of like
goals. Structure classes for sustainably managed.
It is. There. It creates maybe nine in a matrix. If he has three, and we have and you overlay that across our east-west continuum, you would put three of those in that, three of those in that, and three of those in that to create the example that he wants to understand how the forest would be managed, I think.
Yeah, I guess I can see him coming up with nine on his own with three different levels, three different target diameters.
That's what I meant.
Yes.
And entry rates.
And then, I could see him. Much more than nine.
The periodic entry is really a key thing, because it really makes a lot of difference how fast you go up. And how those three things you said, how much you cut at once, how long the...
His matrix would be nine. Overlap it with the three matrices we've put.
Yeah, so it's...
He's going to have 9 points on a continuum.
Yeah.
So there's millions.
Yes.